Hello, and welcome to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Sean Gibson, Bruegel's press officer, and joining me for today's episode are two Bruegel scholars, Simone Tagliapietra.
Hello.
And Georg Zachmann.
Hi.
So we're here to discuss the topic of Europe's failure to reduce its emissions in its transport sector, and that's a subject forming the basis of a Bruegel study that you have both co-authored. Simone, if we could start with you perhaps, and you can explain the problem to us here and how the transport sector is obstructing the EU's efforts to reduce its CO2 emissions.
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, let's start by outlining the fact that the European Union has a long-term vision to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 80-95% by 2050 compared to the emissions we had in 1990. In this framework, the European Union also has a binding commitment to reduce emissions by 40% to be achieved by 2030, and this is our commitment in the framework of the Paris Agreement. To meet these targets, a profound transformation is required in all the EU key emitting sectors, notably electricity and its generation, transport, industry and buildings. If we look at the historical trends of greenhouse gas emissions in Europe, we can see that between 1990 and 2015, emissions have strongly decreased in all sectors, with the only exception of transport, where emissions have actually increased by 20% over the period. This trend is quite worrying also because if you look at the future projection for transport activities in Europe, you would see that we expect between 2010 and 2050 transport demand to increase in Europe by 40%. So we will have even more transport in the future. And if trends continues as today, transport will therefore become really the major stumbling block in the European decarbonization pathway. In particular, while looking into the emissions of the transport sector, it's clear that the major problem concerns road transport. In fact, road transport is responsible for 70% of the overall transport sector emissions. Let me also outline the fact that transport is not only then crucial for decarbonization, but transport is also crucial for another major issue that affects all of us in our daily life, which is air pollution. And air pollution is a very important problem in Europe today, as it is responsible for more than 400,000 premature deaths each year in Europe. This provides you the idea of really how much important it is to decarbonize and to clean up the transport sector, not just for the sake of climate change mitigation, but also for the sake of cleaning up our cities and enhancing the quality of living of all European citizens.
Georg, could you elaborate for us maybe some of the barriers that you see to tackling the problems that the transport sector has in the EU?
I think a key hindrance is essentially political, and you have to see that the car industry in Europe has a very, very dominant and important role in the economic development. In Germany, for example, the car industry is responsible for about 25% of the country's exports, so it has contributed massively to the economic development of the country and the wealth of the country. So policymakers are very careful not to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. And therefore, it has been a challenge to shift away from an economic system that has essentially, and a political system that has pushed for car-friendly cities, for car-friendly taxation, and a number of regulations that essentially try to propel the domestic fossil car industry towards a system that slowly shifts away towards a more sustainable mode of transportation. And a second issue, if you ask me for difficulties in getting to the transition that Simona outlined is so important to engineer, is the differences in or the different levels of responsibility. So on the one hand, you have the European level that is responsible for things like emission standards. On the other hand, you have the national level that is largely responsible for energy and fuel taxation. And finally, and not less important, you have the city and local level that is responsible for a lot of the urban planning. And we see huge differences in Europe here. So you have cities that are very car friendly and have massive amounts of or much higher car penetration than other cities in Europe.
So, Simone, bearing in mind some of the problems that Georg has highlighted, what are some of the solutions that you both might propose, and what kind of measures can realistically be implemented?
Well, we have a strategy. We outline a three-step strategy that I will now briefly explain. In our view, the first action that should be made at the European level is to encourage European countries and cities to adopt plans to ban diesel and petrol vehicles. France, the United Kingdom, for instance, have already adopted on their own plans to ban the sale of diesel and petrol vehicles by 2040. We think that the more European countries adopt such plans, the stronger signal will be given to the European automotive industry to change and to innovate and to develop more and more clean vehicles. By outlining and putting in place sunset deadlines with some 20 years to go, this should ensure an orderly transition for the automotive industry, but also for the leasing industry, which is also an important part of the overall system in Europe, particularly. Europe can play an important role in incentivizing countries and cities to adopt these kind of bans. And in particular, we are proposing the establishment of an EU Clean Transport Fund that could be established to provide dedicated financial support to countries and notably cities committing to the phase-out of diesel and petrol vehicles, for instance, by providing priority financing for the deployment of alternative fuel infrastructure, zero-carbon public buses, and so on and so forth. We are not proposing to have additional financial resources for this. We are just proposing that in the post-2020 budget, the European Union makes a better use of the funds that it is already allocating to transport under, for example, the Connecting Europe Facility for Transport or the Structural and Cohesion Funds. The second point of the strategy is to stimulate a new European reflection on the future of transport taxation. Taxation is a key policy tool to foster road transport decarbonization because taxes can be used to influence user decisions and possibly also to influence the automotive industry strategies. Today, every country have a very different transport taxation system. And just to provide you an example, only 10 countries in Europe today take into account CO2 emissions in the composition of their vehicle registration taxes. So we think that the EU should promote a new discussion among the European countries on the future of transport taxation, as it is also being done, by the way, for example, in the field of digital taxation. To conclude, the last part, the third step of our strategy, concerns research and innovation. As you know, Europe has a solid funding for research and innovation, this cycle called Horizon 2020. We think that in the post 2020 scenario, the European Union should more carefully allocate its money devoted to transport innovation, should become more mission-oriented, and in particular, we think that the EU should focus its post-2020 transport-related research and innovation funding only on early-phase technologies, for instance, hydrogen or solid-state batteries, that can really make a difference. To provide you just one proportion, the funding that the European Union is giving for the research and development in transport represents 0.2% of the research and innovation funding of the European automotive industry. So the money is very little in comparison to what the industry is investing in this. So we need to make sure that this little money, in proportion to what the industry is investing, has a leverage. So it is invested in a strategic way in technologies that otherwise the private sector would not develop alone. So be more mission-oriented, in our view, is the key to make the EU funding for research and innovation in the post-2020 for transport more efficient and effective.
Now, Georg, in this policy brief, you both touch upon the need to change people's habits. Now, this seems like a particularly intractable part of the problem of decarbonising transport. Where would you start, and who takes responsibility?
I would start out by saying that it can be done, and we have examples for the possibility to change people's transportation habit, also based on policy. One example is that a couple of European cities, take London or Stockholm, largely prevented private cars from entering the city centre, and at the same time significantly improved the public transportation system, and that made a difference in these cities. It was largely due to other consideration than climate issues. As Simone said, local air pollution, noise pollution are probably more severe issues there, plus congestion. But it also helps with reducing the emission of greenhouse gases. And a second example is that if you look into fuel consumption in different countries, they are quite different. So take Belgium, for example, which has been had a very, very car-friendly policy in terms of taxation for business vehicles and the build-up of infrastructure, while investment in public infrastructure has lagged behind. And Belgium consumes about 30% more of gasoline and diesel per capita than the average of Europe. So by shifting away from debt, it's possible to get people into the public transportation system more. Now, we are entering now in a new technology world, and there are new opportunities here as well. And I think we do not fully appreciate yet what is possible. We write in the policy brief that one of the big obstacles to modal shift is that in the end, the first and the last mile of the transportation chain, they take the most of the time, and that's the problem why people don't switch to public transportation, because in a car you can go from door to door. Now, with more smarter appliances, with smarter solutions, having bicycles or cars being ready at the train station, that all has now become feasible, and it's starting to deploy more. And policy should not close its eyes to these new opportunities and actively seize them.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this podcast today. Thanks for listening to The Sound of Economics, and a big thank you to my guests, Georg and Simone. You can find more of Bruegel's blog posts and publications, including this policy brief that we've discussed today, on our website, www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again for The Sound of Economics. Until next time.